couldn't get in or out. I mean, everybody, the pilots were really antsy. They were in the weather station all the time. When's this so-and-so weather going to change, you know? And then they used to fly up to Ireland and get whiskey. And they'd want to know when the darkest days would be, when they'd go up there at night and bring whiskey back to their base.
And particularly for D-Day, didn't they have some problems?
The weather was a lot worse than they expected it to be. They postponed it from 4th to the 6th of July. You know.
This is side two of the interview with Earl Slife Jr. And we were talking about the weather leading into D-Day.
Well, I've explained to you the way it was. It was this time that it was socked in, that was before D-Day. But the weather was not very good on D-Day either, but they decided to go ahead anyway. They'd already postponed it a day or two.
And how? What led them to postpone it? What were the conditions like?
The weather, the ocean was... The crossing of the channel was rough, and you've seen movies of that where how rough that water was, and so they went ahead anyway. They decided they couldn't wait any longer. These guys, you know, they'd been there, the paratroopers and everybody that went, they'd been holed up for several weeks just before, and they were really getting antsy. You know, they wanted to do something or go home or whatever, so they decided just to go ahead with it.
What did you think of your officers and fellow soldiers?
Well, the ones we worked with were fine. You know, we didn't have any problem. They were friends with us. They'd travel around the countryside with us. Very informal. We got along well with them. In fact, one of those officers came back to South Dakota when I was back in college, and I saw him. He was there... to visit somebody, I've forgotten who it was. John W. Claus was his name.
And what about your fellow soldiers? What did you think of those guys?
Well, we got along fine. We didn't. Those guys were all good guys. Those ones you saw the pictures of, yeah, we didn't have any problems.
What were interracial relations like in the military at that time?
Well, we didn't have any black troops with us at all. You know, they were pretty much segregated in those days. And we didn't have any racial problems.
Do you recall the day your service ended and what were the circumstances?
Well, it ended when I was discharged at Camp Grant in Illinois on the 31st of December. And I got on a train and came home. Came home to Sioux City, and on New Year's Day, my mother and dad came. My mother had a sister lived in Sioux City, and we used to be back and forth with them a lot. So I had dinner with them.
What was that reunion like for you?
Oh, it was nice, yeah. Nice to see them and for them to see me. Yeah, I'd been gone for quite a while.
What was the readjustment back to civilian life like for you?
Not really difficult. Like I said, I went to work at the bank right away and worked there for two summers. I worked all of 1 year and half a year the next year, then I went back to school.
Did you make use of the GI Bill for that?
Oh, yeah. You bet. When I went back to school, we got all of our books, tuition, everything paid. All we had to do was sign our name. And we got paid, you know. I got like $75 a month. If you were married, those guys got $125 or $30, which was quite a bit of money then. That helped us a great deal. And we got all brand new books. All we had to do was sign our name for them. But the the government has said many times that's one of the best investments they ever made. Educate those guys, you know, but otherwise probably wouldn't have gotten educated.
Do you agree?
Including me, oh, you bet. Yeah.
Did you continue?
You know, education is a priceless thing, as you well know. I understand you want to go to law school, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Where do you want to go?
Georgetown's my top choice, but I might end up at Iowa. We'll see how things turn out.
If you can get a scholarship at one of those schools, Georgetown's pretty expensive.
Yeah.
Iowa would be expensive enough. But I don't know if I told you this part of it. I had a good friend from Sioux City that was in law school with me at Vermilion. And he'd only had 1 year of pre-law, I believe, or two it was. And I had had, after 1 year of law school, we were going to transfer to Iowa. And I made an application and was accepted. He couldn't go because he didn't have enough pre-law. So then I canceled mine and stayed at the university. And then, you know, I don't regret that, but we were both Iowa kids. We had a chance to go to a school in Iowa.
Did you continue those friendships you made during the service?
Well, those guys there, those pictures, yeah. I like those four guys, you know, we still have, after all these years, have contact. Time to time we call each other. This guy in New York, this Anthony Scatola, is a heck of a guy. He and his wife do a lot of song and dance stuff, put on shows. He's forever waiting me, telling me what kind of a show he put on. And he's a very intelligent guy, very religious, has five or six kids. We met them once when Lamont and I were in New York. Our daughter Julie lives there, suburb of New York City. And Scatola lives in, it's a town about 50 miles north of New York City. And he and his wife came down and spent the afternoon with us. That's the only time I've seen him since we got, but we've been on the phone together a lot of times. Birthdays and Christmas and that kind of stuff.
You mentioned you had called a few of those guys on the anniversary of D-Day.
Yeah.
What'd you guys talk about?
Well, we just rehashed old times, you know, where we were and what we were doing now and that kind of stuff.
That was the 60th anniversary here?
60th, yeah. This past June was the 60th anniversary of D-Day. 44 or 45 and 95. 05.
Do you feel like you took part in the post-war economic boom, and in what ways?
Education is all, I suppose. I got my education after that. Well, I mean, beyond the first year of college. And I certainly don't regret that. You know, I never planned on being a lawyer. But they had a program at the university that you could take for your fourth year from the School of Business. You could go to the law school and they'd get credit for that. And I did that and I liked it. And my dad said, well, you're crazy if you don't finish law school. And so I did that. But when I started, I never intended to do that. I figured I was going to be a banker or something else. But I never regretted it. You know, a legal education, you can do a million things with it. You don't have to practice law, as you well know, and you will know as you get into it.
Do you feel like your military experience influences your thinking about war or about the military in general?
No, I've never been anti-military. If we need the military forces, and I've been supportive of that all the time.
Do you feel your military experiences influence you politically in any way?
No. I've been a lifelong Republican, and I guess I will be. You know, I'm not an ardent, how do I want to say it? I'm not one of these flag waver guys as far as politics are concerned. But I'm interested in politics. And I follow what's going on. I vote all the time. I've been a very conscientious voter. A lot of people don't vote, and I think that's a mistake. I mean, here's a privilege we got. You should exercise it. But there are thousands of people who never vote. And some, I guess maybe that's the way it should be. Some of them wouldn't know who to vote for anyway unless they're herded in there by somebody else.
What were your thoughts on some of the wars following World War II, for example, Vietnam?
Well, I'm not opposed to anything that the government has done. I mean, I'm not anti-government. A lot of people think all of that's... I think the people that are running the government are capable of doing it, and they did what they had to do. War is never a pleasant thing, but... I wasn't anti any of those at any time.
And what about the war that's going on right now in Iraq? You have any feelings on that?
I don't really understand that. I think I shouldn't say he made a mistake in what he did, but I think we've carried it beyond what he ever expected to do. It's getting worse now than it was. They had a peaceful situation there for a while. Now they're all anti. They were cheering us on when they freed them from what they have. Now they're our enemies again. So I don't think we're getting any place. That's the way it appears to me, anyway. That thing could drag on and on. And you know, we expected those guys to be home by now when they first started over there. And these poor guys, well, I guess, you know, the ones that are in these reserve units, they went in there thinking they'd never have to go to war. But they got paid for what they did, and they trained. They went to training, every week or two or whatever it is. Now that they have to go, they don't like it, and I can understand that, but then that's part of what they bit off for when they... They took advantage of the opportunity, and now it's kind of turned on them.
Do you ever watch today's war movies?
Yeah, some. There's a war channel on here I watch quite often. 49 or whatever it is. I don't know if you know the number.
I think it's History Channel is what it
is. History Channel, but there's another one, too. I got it right down here. The Military Channel, 256. Let me show you. You get stations that high?
No, we don't get the satellite.
I can get up to 900, you know. I'll show you here on the... What's this?
They show a lot of war documentaries on there.
Yeah.
What do you think about those?
I hear some of them right. Wings Over the World.
What do you think about these documentaries and movies like Saving Private Ryan or something like that?
Well, I like those. I thought Saving Private Ryan was a fantastic show. And the filming of it is just unreal. I hear some rocket stuff. I was going to show you something else this TV will do. Well, this is an aside.
Some radio, huh?
This is nothing but big band music. Here's Andy Kirk. Then you go this way, and you got jazz, and you go down here, and you got big band swing. That's what we have. Groove Lounge. Hey, Andy, you walk away. fun to do this. I don't want to divert you from what you're doing here, but you know, I have to pay a fee to get all that stuff. But on movies, well, let me show you one more thing here. Get it yet.
But there isn't.
3, 2, 5. Oh, what the heck?
Bob Campbell with a rotund 5'6", 200.
Revolution was changing the Air Force as not even jet or rocket engines had.
Huh. That's crazy.
Beginning in the late 1950s.
I'm not going to waste your time. But anyway, there's some other channels that have interesting. There are 325, 326, and nothing but Westerns. Western movies all the time. A lot of it's Gunsmoke, old Gunsmokes. If you like that kind of stuff, you can get that on all the time. Go ahead, that's a little diversion from what we're talking about.
Okay. Well, I only have a few more questions left. How do you feel like your life might have been different had you not served in the military?
Well, that's hard to say. I'm sure I would have gotten an education of some kind, whether I'd gone to law school or not, I don't know. But I had expected to go back to school and get a degree of some kind, whether it'd been a war or not.
Did you ever use any of your weather training again?
Not really. Except to recognize what kind of clouds we have and that sort of stuff. But I had no use for it other than that.
A few years back, Tom Brokaw wrote a book labeling your generation the greatest generation. What are your thoughts on that?
I've read part of it. I haven't read it all, but it's interesting.
Okay, well, I think that's about all the questions I have. Is there anything you'd like to add that we haven't covered in this interview?
Oh, I don't know what it'd be. We've covered most of the bases.
All right. Well, with that, I'd like to thank you, June. And that
You're welcome. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
All right. And this will end the interview.